Okay, so over to Bill. We had an able substitute last time. Major Sitter, are we doing that first?
Oh, yes. I'm out of sync. Okay, the Buddha's word on loving kindness.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in all blessings safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living here and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life a child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and goodwill, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. I am not holding to false views, the pure hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. So, as usual, let's just take a few minutes to center our minds. To just relax. Let go of all the tensions that we've built up during the day, so that we can put our mind in a state where it's fit to receive the Dhamma. We pay our respects to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. because it's through the efforts of the Buddha that we're all able to know the path that takes us to the from freedom from suffering. That path is expounded in the suttas, the teachings, which is the Dharma. And we know the path works not only because the Lord Buddha trod the path, but many thousands since then have also become enlightened by following that path. But we owe it all to the Buddha. All those who followed him that became enlightened, all owe their success to him and to their own efforts. We have the same opportunity if we want to take it, if we want to practice, if we want to do what the Lord Buddha laid down, if we want to follow the path. One of the features of the Buddha, one of the characteristics of the Buddha, is said to be that he is the unequaled trainer of those who can be trained, the teacher of men and heavenly beings. And one of his great skills was he was able to teach the same subject matter but in different ways. Explain things in different ways, depending as to who his audience was. So when you read the Dhamma, or when you listen to a talk, you may hear similar terms, similar terminology, and similar explanations, but with a slight twist on them. For example, I've been talking for at least the last two sessions about the defilements, about the kilesa, that Pali term. And I've told you that that normally refers to greed, hatred, and delusion. But under some circumstances, the Lord Buddha... Oh, well, let's have a look at those. What are they? They are things which pollute the mind. They are things which pollute the citta, that term citta, which I've used before. They are unwholesome states of mind. And they generate bad karma for us if we indulge in them. So they're unwholesome states of mind, basically. But sometimes the Lord Buddha would change things around a bit, and instead of referring to greed, hatred, and delusion, he'd sometimes substitute lust for greed. Still really referring to the same thing, in the sense that it's still referring to unwholesome states of mind which cause you to be reborn and have poor outcomes, poor karmatic outcomes. And sometimes he'd refer to the cankers. And again, he's simply referring to all of the unwholesome side of one's mental being. We're all composites of good mental faculties and not so good ones, or unwholesome ones. And we need to promote the good, and we need to forsake the not so good and the downright terrible. So the cankers he would refer to, instead of talking about them in terms of greed, hatred and delusion, he talked about them in terms of wanting for sensual experiences. He talks about them in terms of wanting for existence. He talked about them in terms of having false view. And he talked about them in terms of ignorance. And ignorance is something I want to talk a little bit more about. In Pali, it's the word avijja. And whilst the defilements are clearer to us in terms of we can see them in our everyday life, ignorance is there. It's their cause, if you like. It's their, it's the soil in which they grow. So I'm going to spend a bit of time maybe talking about avijja, ignorance. But the four kankas that I just mentioned, in some other, or on other occasions, the Lord Buddha referred to them as floods, because they can flood the heart. The same as the Lord Buddha talked about unwholesome states as being fires which need extinguishing, the fire of lust, the fire of ill will, and the fire of delusion. And we've shown how delusion is key to the other two, but they passion the heart, lust, ill will. Just think when you get angry. Some people fly into a rage. They lose all self-control, no mindfulness. They have physical symptoms and they have mental symptoms. Bad karma. Lust, the same. Some people just lose all control because they desire someone or something. Again, not good. But when you look at these things in terms of the kankas, in terms of wanting for sensual experience, we're simply redefining the way that we look at all these unwholesome characteristics. And I've spoken over the last few sessions about sensual experience, so I'm not going to go over that too much, but basically wanting for pretty sights, sweet sounds, and the opposite, not wanting for those things which we deem to be ugly or unpleasant. This is the cause of craving, the cause of desire. This is a cause of suffering. But associated with that, we have a craving for existence. Some people come near to death, some people just are afraid because they want to exist. They don't want to die. But it's not just craving for existence in this world or continued existence. It's craving, wanting for a birth in other realms, or a rebirth into human realm. Or a birth in heaven, depending as to what your religion is. People want to be born somewhere better than where they've left off, somewhere better than this world. whether they're Christian or Muslim, Jewish, doesn't matter. How many people want to get born into a heavenly realm? People don't say, oh, I'd love to be born in hell. So they want for existence, and they don't want for this life to be the end. They want something better. Craving again, wanting again, desire. Cause of karma. And then we have some more unwholesome states of mind, and that is associated with wrong view. Now this is particularly nasty. Why? Because right view is the first step on the path to enlightenment. Without right view, you can't progress. So having wrong view is a serious flaw in anyone's attempt to be free from suffering. And wrong view particularly refers to a view that, well, several views, but a view that you're not experiencing the results of karma in this life. There's no such thing as the result of karma. Well, secondly, there's no such thing as the cause of karma. Cause and effect are not real. For anyone who believes that, it's very difficult to work out why you would practice meditation, why you would be virtuous. Because it leads to the next view, which is that this life is just a bunch of conditions. When you die, you die. It's not karma. There's no recipient of karma. So we would, I guess, look at that and say, well, to some extent you can see that, as we've explained before, there is nothing of substance in this body and nothing of substance in this mind, nothing that lasts forever, nothing that you can control absolutely and it will always do your bidding. There's no me, no I, no you, no us, no we in this body or this mind. There's simply fundamental particles or fundamental faculties, fundamental facets of existence that have all coalesced and stay together for a little while, then they break up and disappear. So you could argue, well, that's the same thing, isn't it? Well, no, it's not. Because one of those conditions that we talk about when we talk about it from a Buddhist perspective is, one of those conditions is karma. So the first two false views mean that the third false view doesn't reflect what Buddhist teachings is, and it doesn't reflect the way to be free from suffering. So anyone with such false views will find it very difficult to get a start. And then there's avijja. Ignorance is the way that it's usually translated into English. But to some extent, again, not such a brilliant translation. Not because the translators are poor, but simply because the English and Pali don't always go hand in hand. It's not always so easy to get a term that's a one-for-one likeness. And I would suggest that avijja is one of those terms. Because avijja, this is something that we should take seriously. This is our enemy. Ignorance is the enemy of knowledge. Just as I said to you before, when we're talking about Kilesa, that we should try and personalise them, and try and think of them so that we can defeat them, take them on as our enemy, especially moha, especially delusion. Delusion and ignorance go hand in hand. So it's worthy to, or explaining Awijaya is a worthy thing to do for those people who want to practice on the path. And if you haven't heard that term before, then it's one that you should watch out for. Because ignorance doesn't mean don't know anything. Ignorance is generally considered to be a lack of knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. Ignorance of the truth of suffering. Ignorance of the truth of the cause of suffering. Ignorance of the emancipation from suffering. And ignorance of the way to achieve emancipation. Other than that, other than those four things, ignorance knows everything. Ignorance generates this world that we live in. It generates round after round after round after round of rebirth. Ignorance is a driving force behind samsara, the wheel of life. It's something to be taken seriously. And yes, we can talk about ignorance, but from an English or from an English perspective, it sounds like, oh, not very smart. Well, that would be entirely a misunderstanding of what ignorance is, because Awijaya is extremely smart, but in a worldly way. It knows everything. What it doesn't know is how to be free from suffering. So it generates more suffering. But as we replace our vijja with vijja, or with knowledge, with wisdom, with understanding, and gradually weaken its hold, we progress along the path a lot faster, a lot steadier. And the good qualities within us start to come forward. And that's when we're heading in the right direction. But I want to go back and talk now a little bit about how Awijaya drives samsara, how ignorance of the Four Noble Truths drives the wheel of life. Because that is a key component of the Buddha's teachings. It's a doctrine called Paticchasamuppada. And it's probably, along with the Four Noble Truths, it's probably the most profound doctrine that you'll find in the world. The Lord Buddha said, "He who knows Paticchasamuppada knows the Dhamma. He who knows the Dhamma knows Paticchasamuppada." So what is Paticchasamuppada? Well, it's translated as dependent origination. Effectively, it's an explanation for cause and effect. And it's split up into different facets. And Awijaya is right there at the beginning. But this is not a linear progression. This is circular, and it's often drawn as a circular series of events that occur in the past, that are occurring in the present, and will occur in the future. But right there, front and center, is Awijaya, ignorance. Because we don't know the Four Noble Truths, because effectively you could say, because we are not enlightened, we're not free from suffering, we generate karma. In Pali, the first step is avijja paccaya sankhara. In other words, wisdom creates karma. And then, ignorance creates karma, and that's in the past. So in our past lives, because we're not enlightened, we've created some karma, and that karma will then condition the next thing, which is vijnana, or rebirth. In this particular instance, it's a particular kind of consciousness. It's the rebirth consciousness. So because of ignorance in a past life and karma and the karma that it generated, based on that, conditioned on that, there is a rebirth consciousness which takes place in this lifetime. And when we take birth as a human, that means that we have what they call nama and rupa, which is mind and body. For us, body and mind, say. Because that's what being a human means. It means you have a physical body, and it means that you have the faculty of feeling, of memory, or perception, that you are able to think, to imagine, and that you have consciousness. So you have those five things: body, a form, if you like, feeling, recollection, perception, whatever you want to define that, thought process, and consciousness. And they all arise dependent as being dependent on being born in the first place. And because you have mind and body, there arises the sensory organs and sensory perception. So you have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, skin, whatever. And it's through these senses that the mind interacts with the outside world. It's through these senses, through experiencing sights, sounds, smells, etc., that the body, that the mind, experiences the outside world and therefore starts to react to it. So based on having the senses, contact arises between sights and the eye, sounds and the ear, smells and the nose, tastes and the tongue, hot and cold, hard and soft, touching by the body. Again, one dependent on the other. If there were no sense organs, there'd be no contact. We wouldn't know what was around us. We wouldn't hear things, we wouldn't see things, we wouldn't smell things. So only because there are senses can we have contact with the outside world. When contact happens, then depending on contact is feeling. We experience things via the senses. And we like some things and we dislike others, and we're entirely neutral to yet other things. So far in that experience, even though the mind is aware of what's gone on in the outside world, so far no unwholesome thoughts or any wholesome thoughts have really occurred. But feeling of pleasure generates wanting for more, generates desire. This is where the defilements occur. Remember, all this was underpinned by ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. So Awijja, now, as we work through step by step, from Awijja, ignorance in our past life, now all the way through to where we are right now, as we're sitting here, is generating desire. It's generating wanting. So as our mind goes and becomes engaged with the outside world, desire gets us tangled up in the outside world. We want things, we want nice sights, we want nice things that are pleasurable, that's going to look after and pamper our body, that are going to make us happy. This is desire. Things that don't make us happy, things that we don't like, we want to get rid of. And so we experience suffering when they don't go. When you're sitting here and you've got pain in your legs because you're a little bit uncomfortable or because you've been sitting for a long while and you want that pain to go away, that's suffering. But the pain's the pain. It doesn't ask to be liked or disliked. It simply is what it is. Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, physical sensations, they are what they are. They don't ask to be liked. They don't ask to be disliked. It's the way we treat them when we perceive them. And we all perceive them differently. We all have our own experiences. We all like different things. We all dislike different things. Even as we look at the same object, one person will like it and another one won't. But that object doesn't care. It doesn't know any different. It is what it is. It's made up of the elements. It's stardust, as are we. But yet we put all of these conditions on them. We say that they're beautiful, that they're nice, or that they're sweet, or that whatever they might be. We've got all sorts of things, descriptions that we heap on the natural world. But in reality, they are what they are. They don't ask to be liked, they don't ask to be disliked. But we take it upon ourselves to say, oh, I like that, so I want more. And so, based on that desire, comes attachment, clinging. Now we're really getting stuck into unwholesome sides of our character. Because we want more. So we cling to what we've got, and we cling to the idea of what we want, and we cling to whatever we believe wrongly will bring us happiness. But in the end, we have to let go of both the things that bring us unhappiness and the things that bring us happiness. Because the whole point of the practice of Dhamma is to tread the middle path, the middle way, to find the exact center of all of that so that we're neither liking nor disliking. Neither good nor bad, neither ignorant nor wise. And because of Upadana, because of clinging, there's then again this this notion of existence, this notion of where to be born. This is all happening as we sit here now. So when I talk about desire and clinging, and they're the way that we react to the outside world. Some of those reactions, though, are good. So the clinging, the wanting and the clinging are limited, and some of them are not so good. So in other words, this is where we are making karma now, in the present. So we saw our avijja in the past, created karma that caused rebirth. Now we're in the present moment, and our defilements in the present moment are creating more karma for us. So what we talked about as being in the past is now reoccurring in the present, and all what we're doing now is explaining it, but in different terms. And depending on how we create that karma, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, will determine where our next birth takes place. Which realm? Hell realm? Animal realm? Ghost? Human realm? Heavenly realms? Realms which beings exist that have no body, where they dwell in blissful peacefulness for aeons and aeons. The Buddhist cosmos is full of different levels of being, and our karma will determine which one we get reborn in. And based on that karma, then in the future we take birth. And when we're born in the future, we experience old age, sickness, and death. And the wheel is complete. We go back to avijja in this life that now causes us to be reborn. And we'll create more ignorance. And unless we practice to remove ignorance, then that circle of dependent origination will continue. And that's what drives samsara. That's what drives the wheel of life. And the only way free from that is to eliminate ignorance. There's no other way. Let me say that again. There is no other way to be free from suffering other than through the elimination of ignorance. That is through knowing the Four Noble Truths. And we do that through practicing our meditation. Meditation is the medicine that treats the disease of ignorance. And we do that in stages as we practice. We start to practice meditation in a way that develops our mindfulness. So then we are aware of unwholesome states when they arise. And we're aware of wholesome states as they arise. And we know what to promote and what to let go of. Mindfulness in Pali is sati. And sati in the suttas often is accompanied by another word, which is sampajanya. And sampajanya means clear understanding. So when you're practicing meditation and you've got mindfulness, clear understanding means that you know what you are aware of or know what you're experiencing. And banya is wisdom. I once heard it said that sati or mindfulness is, if you have an analogy, it's like a clock on a wall. So mindfulness is aware that there's something at a specific point on the wall. Sampajanya knows that it's a clock, and mindfulness and wisdom, banya, can tell you what the time is. They go hand in hand. And the stronger we develop our mindfulness and our clear understanding and our wisdom, the more our vijaya retreats and the more ground we gain in the battle. So sati is very important. Sampajanya is important. Wisdom is important. I'll give you an example. There was a monk, a Western monk, in Thailand. And many years ago, Westerners weren't so common in Thailand, Western monks in particular. And so Thais would often come from all sorts of places just to, I guess, take a peek at Westerners that were being ordained. And on this particular day, this monk decided that he would meditate outside instead of meditating in his kuti. He found a comfortable spot, sat down, started to practice. And his mind became very calm. And when he'd been sitting there for quite a while, he came out of that calm state, and then he realized immediately that surrounding him was a whole pile of lay people who'd come in a bus to visit the monastery because they were there to pay their respects to the teacher and have a bit of a tourist sightseeing experience. And they came upon the monk sitting there. And the monk had been completely oblivious to the crowd gathering. And some of the lay people had gone off to get everybody else from the bus to come and look and stare at the Westerner who was sitting there completely oblivious to them. But as the monk started to become aware, his mindfulness was so strong that he knew what was going on, but his mind didn't get entangled with all the commotion. And then at that time, one or two monks who were part of the touring party, so to speak, they decided that they were going to wake up the Western monk and that they knew what to do to bring him out of this state of meditation. So they came right up close and clapped their hands right in the monk's ear. But because he had good mindfulness, and because he was aware of what was going on, he didn't flinch, he didn't move. And then they decided, well, they're going to shout at him as loudly as they can. So that's exactly what they did. They got as close as they could and they shouted in his ears. But because his mindfulness was so good and his sampajanya was there, he understood what was going on, his mind didn't move, didn't flinch. And the story ends with the fact that his teacher then came along because the teacher had heard all the commotion and wondered what on earth was going on and all this noise being made by all these lay people about come and see the Western monk sitting there meditating. And then the monk heard it, the voice of his teacher, and he knew what that was. So his mindfulness was there, his sampajanya was there, and he couldn't deny his teacher. So he came out of that state with mindfulness because he was able to delineate, distinguish those which were unwholesome activities and the word of his teacher, which was wholesome. True story. I know because I was the monk. So mindfulness, sampajanya, wisdom are all tools which we develop to try and overcome avijja. And we do that through meditation. We do that through picking a subject and being aware of it as it exists in its natural state. Whatever our meditation subject is, it will arise, it'll be there for a while, and it'll pass away. And that's how we develop mindfulness. Sampajanya, clear understanding, is the foundation of wisdom. Those three things, mindfulness, clear understanding, and wisdom, are the tools which we use in meditation to overcome avijja. And when we overcome avijja, and the light and the knowledge of the Four Noble Truths shines forth, then we'll be free from suffering also. Well, that's enough for me today. Okay, well. I do before we finish is I want to just talk a little bit about practicing when you're not here. I just want to mention kind of meditation that started in Burma, and it's quite useful for lay people. And what you do is you place your mindfulness on whatever you're doing at the time, and you repeat to yourself what it is that you're doing, a doing word. So if you're walking, you say to yourself, walking, walking, walking. If you're lifting a kettle to make a cup of tea, you can say lifting, lifting. If you're sitting down, you can say sitting, sitting, sitting. So you're always doing something. The body is always doing something, even when it's still. It's either standing, walking, sitting, lying down. It's always doing something. So whatever that verb is, whatever that doing word is, focus your attention there. So I'm listening, listening, listening. Reaching, reaching, reaching. Talking, talking, talking. So by doing that, you can, it's a tool to use to try and keep your mindfulness on what it is that you're doing in the present moment, to stop your mind from going out all over the place and thinking of all sorts of things. So I would recommend that you try this for a while. Just simply putting your mind on what it is that you're doing and what it is that you're experiencing. And just repeat to yourself whatever you're doing, whatever that word is. And then you'll find, if you do it often enough, that your meditation will improve. When you come to sit here and take a formal meditation subject, your mindfulness will be better. So I would recommend that you try that. Okay. So any questions?
What did your teacher say? Do all those people that try to disturb you?
He said, he just came up and he just called my name. And of course I recognised his voice. It was not a day when lots of people were expected at the monastery. I mean, we only got lots of people there on some occasions. Some of the teachers had busloads of people going every day. Mm. That's not kind of monastery that you wanted to stay in too much if you wanted some peace and quiet. But my teacher was becoming popular, and on this particular day, one or two busloads of people turned up. And there's all this commotion about me sitting in meditation, and he just came up and he just called my name, because then when I had to respond to him, then the lay people were then able to say, oh yeah, well now he's finished, oh yeah, oh, so, because the lay people were making up all sorts of stories about this monk who's, you know, sitting there, he was going to be enlightened, or all sorts of things, you know, he's going to fly next, you know, that sort of thing. That's just Thai lay people. And so the teacher couldn't let that continue. So he just wanted to put a stop to it all. So he just called my name. Unfortunately, at that time, I had come out of strong meditation and could hear him, obviously. But it's just that the mind is just so still. And so even though you can hear external objects or perceive external objects, the mind just does not get involved with them. And you can examine them and you can understand that they're there, but there's just total detachment. And that's what you need if you, when you really start to practice and really do some analysis. But enlightenment is still a way away. But yeah, so he just did that to stop all these rumours and all these things. Otherwise there'd be busloads more coming here. Yeah, because they go off and tell a whole bunch of other people and then there'd be tourists coming around. And that's a bit like Thailand at the time.
I suppose also, not only just being a Westerner, very light-headed, the redhead. The redhead and the very pale as well.
Just imagine if you levitate.
Yeah, well, that would have been the next thing. But
yeah, actually, joined by another Spastu once from Bangkok to come here to see Thailand.
Did you see him?
No, well, I didn't actually.
Just interesting. At some stage, is there any way we can have a look at the photo of your when you were monk and also you were born in
place? Oh yeah, I was. My ordained name was Panyopaso, Panya, wisdom, or Baso, bright light, one who shines with wisdom. Panyopaso. Panyo. As in Panya, as in wisdom, Panyopaso. Obasa, it means light. So it's one who shines with wisdom, Panyopaso. But yes, if you want to see a photograph. Next time you come to my house.
Next time you come on a Monday.
Am I coming next Monday? Am I teaching next Monday?
No, tonight is your...
My last night?
Yeah, last night. Thank you very much.
Oh. Thank you.
Oh, he wanted to take a photo.
I'll do it again.
Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge, wisdom, practice, technique, everything. And you actually dive deep into the Dharma all these weeks, really serious and very substantial way of teaching. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes. I've done that particularly because I didn't want to run it like beginners every time.
Yeah.
So we hope you come again next year.
Yes, of course. There you go.
Oh, well, there you go.
Even in the years, we've noticed a booking.
Yes.
Well, the Armadale group want me to go and do next year. I don't know, like 200 people, it's not my cup of tea. I prefer intimate groups like this where we can just share experiences and that. Well, thank you very much.
And if there's a request from someone, if we would have it on a Saturday or Sunday, because they cannot come on Monday, and so we're looking into making it possible, but we're going to discover the monk or you or anyone, because sometimes people don't come on, they cannot come on Monday night, and so we're looking at the possibility of maybe a Saturday afternoon or Sunday, maybe 1 hour or something like that, so that people can drive here during the day. It's all two people. So it's a possibility.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
maybe I'll just come and meditate on a Monday. So, Phil, you still want to come on a Monday?
Yeah, I would like to, yes.
Yeah, so there you are. So maybe I'll come and sit at the back somewhere out the way.
Yeah.
On a personal note, I find your teaching very enlightening. On my condition, I think I remember the first session we had. I had less tremor in the night. I was very, very calm.
Good. Oh, that's my pleasure. Giving the gift of Dharma is the greatest gift you can give to anybody. So it's my pleasure to be able to be given the opportunity to share the Dharma, because that gives me good merit and gives everyone who's listening good merit also. So thank you very much for your attendance. I appreciate your company. It's been wonderful to be here.
I hope we don't have to wait for a year to do some more. I would love to be able to every now and again, maybe whatever sessions that are created, that you are able to impart some more of your your wisdom.
We work something out.
Okay, well, look, I'm always open to that. I'm fairly easy going. Now that I'm retired, I have lots of time.
We could even look at a short-term retreat, like weekend or something. Can people come work like even 6 hours sometime a month with that, and people like that.
We'll see.
12 to 6 or something like that.
So maybe we'll
off and on
get someone to come and we'll just sit for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Can you sit for 6 hours?
Maybe you can try.
Breaks in between.
Yeah, break alternative sitting in walking meditation or
something. Yeah, exactly. Toilet breaks as well.
Can I say thank you?
No,
thank you for inviting myself. It's lovely to turn up. I enjoyed it. It's been really good.
Oh, that's
good. I think one question for Steve, how rarely can you clap? Can you demonstrate how it is now I'm here? How bad was it?
Yeah, well,
that was just a test to see how many people were
there. How many people were away. You know, when you're disturbed in someone, meditation like that, when someone claps off.
Oh, someone wants to come in after the gentleman from before.
If you're disturbed in your meditation like that, then that only means that you don't have mindfulness. If you have mindfulness, then even if you hear something, the mind doesn't become attached to it. And if your concentration is really good, you don't hear it at all. So,
hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
We're just finishing now, so. So it's Bill's over to Bill again.
Over to Bill.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may always receive the blessings of my life, may those who attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through the self-sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my soul. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and illusion be dispelled.
Thank you.